edition of Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK, 99.7 FM in New London, New Hampshire, and WUVR, 1490 AM, and 98.9 FM in Lebanon, New Hampshire. This is Saturday Sports Talk, your weekly catch-up of what's happening at sports in the Upper Valley. I'm Greg Fennell. In the next hour, we'll be looking back to last weekend's Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl, a defensive showdown won by the New Hampshire squad over Vermont over at Castleton University. We'll take a look at some of the new coaches that are going to be on hand for high school Upper Valley sports, because that's going to be coming up real soon here, just in the next couple of weeks. And we'll also look back at a variety of developments over the past week, including the end of the NECBL season, a local connection in the Cape Cod League baseball playoffs championship decided a couple of days ago. And Pat Pelletier, Upper Valley golfer extraordinaire, finds himself back in serious competition in a New Hampshire Golf Association event, so we'll talk about his week on the links as well, and anything else that pops up over the next hour or so. 1-888-299-3151, the phone number, with Dapper Dan in the studio in New London. He can get you on the program because he does all the important stuff. I just sit here and yammer on for the next hour or so, but it's not just me who keeps you busy with 3 hours of live and local on WNTK and WUVR on this Saturday. Rich Parker and Rob Woodard coming up after the 10 o'clock news and weather. For Valley Buzz, two more hours of locally focused talk here from the conference room of the Hilton Garden Inn between Lebanon, Route 120 and La Bombard Road in Lebanon. They'll take you up until noon. That's your 3 hours of live and local in the morning. And then more live radio coming up at 6:15 tonight as the Red Sox and the Yankees continue their series at Fenway Park. Of course, not everything that happens in the world of sports on a Friday night makes it into Saturday morning newspaper, so that is why we sit here and read about it. Developments last night at Fenway Park make it apparent that your phone isn't the only thing in the world that has an airplane mode. Apparently, Garrett Whitlock has that as well. Came in the ninth inning of a 2-1 Yankees-led game last night. Helped the Red Sox get into extra innings. Shut down six of the seven batters he faced. Three on strikeouts, allowing just a walk. And that gave the Red Sox the opportunity for the 3-2 come-from-behind win in 10 innings. Yes, the Yankees lose! The Yankees lose! And you heard it on WNTK. Last night, Whitlock certainly did his part. He's been in and out with injuries lately. A whole lot of Red Sox have been on the injured list. In fact, we could probably get a medical sponsor for the length of time it's going to be taking to talk about the number of guys who were out of action over the past few weeks. But Whitlock very solid last night in what J.D. Martinez considered airplane mode, stuff that was just so filthy coming off the right-hander that the Yankees just could not keep up with it. A little surprising that Whitlock got the call when he did. Normally, manager Alex Cora likes to put him in a higher leverage situation with the Red Sox in the lead, but the Sox injuries just keep on mounting. Closer Tanner Houck was on the injured list with a back problem. John Schreiber, who also would help out in those circumstances, he had already pitched two innings to close out Thursday's win over Baltimore, so the options were extremely limited. Red Sox brought on Whitlock. He did his job, and the Sox certainly made the most of the situation. Clay Holmes struggling on the mound for the Yankees in a save situation. He walked Xander Bogaerts and Alex Verdugo back-to-back with one out in the bottom of the ninth inning. Martinez comes in with his third hit of the night. RBI single to center brought in the tying run. Whitlock still did his job in the 10th inning after walking Aaron Judge on a full count. He got Anthony Rizzo to line out, got a couple of strikeouts to get the Sox to the bottom of the 10th inning, and that's when Tommy Pham came up and was the hero with the RBI single down the third baseline to score the winning run with one out in the bottom of the 10th inning. Sox still trying to remain relevant in the wild card picture. You wouldn't think so after Chris Sale's injury that knocked him out for the season, but he's been missing for quite a while, along with another bunch of guys that we'll get into in a moment. But at least for one night, Sox can feel pretty good about a win. Second straight one-run win, two, as they stay four games out of the wild card. Red Sox 3, Yankees 2 in 10. Series continues at Fenway tonight. National TV means a later-than-usual start, 7:15 first pitch, 6:15 the broadcast time on 99.7 FM. One bit of good news off the injury list. Outfielder Kike Hernandez could return to the team next week. He had his second game of a minor league rehab stint down at Double-A Portland last night, 0-3 with a walk, and he is scheduled to play for the Sea Dogs again today, with Sunday likely to being a day off. If all goes well, the Sox expect to activate him for the start of a road trip that'll begin Tuesday in Pittsburgh. Others who might come back soon, well, second baseman Trevor Story is starting to swing a bat on a regular basis. He is supposed to travel to Pittsburgh with the team next week and start taking regular batting practice, but his return is not expected to come until at least the end of the month. Left wrist contusion for left-handed pitcher Matt Strom. He's continued to throw some live batting practice, or at least will be at Fenway tomorrow. Minor league rehab stint could be coming for him real soon. Same for Brian Bello. He'll start a rehab assignment at Portland on Sunday to try to work his way back from his left groin strain. Outfielder Rob Refsnyder, he is looking at a rehab assignment that could start today at AA Portland. Certainly could use his right-handed bat in the lineup. And Tanner Houck, as noted before, won't be coming back for at least a week plus as he continues to try to figure out what's causing his lower back inflammation. That's just a little bit of an update on the Red Sox from the injury standpoint. Bit of a bombshell from Major League Baseball yesterday evening. San Diego Padres so looking forward to having a batting lineup that included Juan Soto and Manny Machado, as well as Fernando Tatis Jr., but the latter of the three is not going to be playing anymore this season, and certainly not for the first few weeks of next season as well, after being hit with an 80-game suspension for violating Major League Baseball's performance-enhancing substance rules. Apparently, Tatis tested positive for something called clostebol. He says it was in a medication he took to treat ringworm. He did initially appeal the penalty, but realized the mistake was made on his own. He says it was done innocently, and he will accept the suspension effective immediately. That means Tatis, who's missed the entire season anyway with a broken wrist caused by a motorcycle accident in the offseason, once again raising the question of his maturity and his ability to play Major League Baseball on a regular basis in a responsible fashion. He will miss the last 48 games of the regular season, the first 32 of next season, but some of those games will be reduced if the Padres, rather, make the Major League Baseball playoffs. Everybody was shocked, said Machado, after a 10-5 win in Washington last night. Tatis, 23 years of age, signed a 14-year, $340 million contract before last year, and he is now one of the most prominent players ever penalized for a PED suspension, includes such luminaries as Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez. To the scoreboard we go. American League, Toronto getting shut out at home by Cleveland last night, 8-0. Chicago White Sox scoring twice in the seventh for a 2-0 win over Detroit. Baltimore rolled over Tampa Bay, 10-3. Orioles are in the playoff picture. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Seattle 6 and Texas 2. Oakland loses at home to loses on the road, rather, to Houston, 7-5. Minnesota, we were checking on that in a moment, but apparently it was not completed. The L.A. Dodgers in interleague play were 8-3 winners in Kansas City last night. And the National League side, we had San Francisco beating Pittsburgh 5-3, Colorado over Arizona 5-3, St. Louis 3, Milwaukee 1. One run in the top of the ninth gave Philadelphia a 2-1 win over the Mets and put them in the playoff picture. Washington welcoming back Juan Soto for the first time since that massive trade a week and a half ago. Saw Soto have a multi-hit game in a 10-5 win for San Diego over the Nationals. Atlanta a winner 4-3 over Miami. Those standings, even with the loss last night, Yankees aren't hurting at all, though they have not played very well since the All-Star break. They remain 10 games up in the East, with Cleveland up by a game and a half in Minnesota in the Central, and Houston up 11 on Seattle in the West. It's going to be a logjam fighting for those three playoff spots for the wild card in the American League. As of right now, those belong to the Seattle Mariners, Minnesota Twins, and the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles. But Minnesota's just a half game out of the wild card. White Sox 2.5 out of the wild card. Even the Red Sox, with a 2 games under .500 mark, can consider themselves in the picture with 48 games to play. But there will be a lot of shuffling in that regard over the next few weeks. National League, a little bit more cut and dried. Mets up 6 in the East. Dodgers up 16 in the West. St. Louis and Milwaukee battling it out, separated by a game and a half in the Central. But as far as the wild card's concerned, looks like it's only going to be four teams fighting for those three spots. They're held by Atlanta, Philadelphia, and San Diego right now, but Milwaukee's 2 games out of a wild card, 1.5 back out of first place in the Central. So That's going to rotate things around as we get a little bit further down the road. NFL news. 2 years after a pair of former players sued the NFL over the treatment of black retirees in the league's $1 billion concussion settlement, hundreds of men whose medical tests were rescored to eliminate race bias can now qualify for those awards. It's big news for black retirees of the NFL. The 2020 lawsuit unearthed the fact that dementia tests were being race-normed, adjusted due to assumptions that black people have a lower cognitive baseline score. Charges to the changes to the settlement made last year meant to make those tests race-blind. Now of 646 black men whose tests were rescored, nearly half qualify for dementia awards that could range anywhere from $600,000 plus for moderate dementia to $35,000 for enhanced medical training. Good news for veterans, particularly black veterans of NFL play. Deshaun Watson apologized before his preseason debut with the Cleveland Browns last night for his repellent behavior toward women, and then he promptly stunk it up in Jacksonville in a 24-13 win for Cleveland. He spoke before the exhibition game, apologizing, quote, to all the women I have impacted, end of quote, after being accused by two dozen women of sexual misconduct during massage therapy sessions. He is awaiting word of an appeal by the NFL of his six-game suspension and $5 million fine for his behavior toward women. Another reason why NFL preseason games should not be held, a knee injury to the Jets' Zach Wilson Friday night has the Jets' high hopes somewhat dimmed for their second-year quarterback. He hurt his right knee in the first quarter of a 24-21 win last night, but appeared to hurt it as he planted the cut on the field. He will have an MRI scheduled later today. Kirk Cousins, another one of the anti-vaxxers in the NFL, he won't play tonight. He has COVID once again. It was determined yesterday after he felt ill on Thursday. Very minimal symptoms, according to Minnesota coach Kevin O'Connell, so he will not be in action tonight. NFL scoreboard from preseason yesterday, Atlanta beating Detroit 27-23, Arizona 36, Cincinnati 23. The Jets were winners, as noted before, 24-21 over Philly, and the Niners were 28-21 winners over Green Bay. Pretty full schedule going on the NFL. You might have caught this earlier in the week, the NBA's announcement that Bill Russell's number 6 will be retired league-wide starting next year, although players currently wearing number 6 can still do so. 16 players listed, according to NBA.com, who still wear number 6. Of course, LeBron James is the most prominent of them. Russell's one of 12 players in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame who wore number 6 at some time during their careers. You might remember a couple of them, Patrick Ewing and, of course, Dr. J, Julius Irving. Vegas Golden Knights goalie Robin Lehner out for the upcoming season because of the need for hip surgery. It's a big loss for the Golden Knights, who will have to find some sort of substitute in goal after Lehner's 44-game season last year, in which he had a 23-17-2 record. Other news from the world of sports. PGA Tour opening up its FedEx Cup playoffs at the St. Jude Classic in Memphis. Leadership belongs to American J.J. Spahn right now at 11 under par with Austria's Sepp Straka, one shot back along with American Troy Merritt. It's the first of 3 weeks of playoff action. The rest of the weekend will not include Woodstock native Keegan Bradley, who missed the cut by one shot and is projected to drop from 33rd to 42nd on the FedEx Cup standings. Top 70 after next week's event in Wilmington, Delaware, advance to the Tour Championship down in Atlanta. LPGA has its event going on in Northern Ireland right now. It is the Handa World Invitational, and South Africa's Leanne Price maintains a lead, now a four-way lead, with Pyeong Chen, Emily Christine Pedersen, and American Amanda Doherty at 11 under par heading into the third round of play. Major League Soccer tonight, New England Revolution at home to take on DC United. Teams with differing fates right now. New England tied for the final playoff spot in the East, but out of the picture based on fewer wins than the other three teams with which it is tied. DC United in last place once again in the East, but trying to revive its fortunes, having hired Wayne Rooney as coach a couple of weeks ago, and just 2 days ago confirming the acquisition of Christian Benteke from Crystal Palace of the English Premier League to bolster its attack. To the world of racing, it is NASCAR weekend in Richmond. With the news that Bubba Wallace has signed a multi-year extension to stay with 23XI Racing, joined them last year, most prominent minority driver in NASCAR at this time. Multi-year extension, but not said how long that extension will be, but he will be behind the wheel of the number 23 Camry through at least next season. The Richmond race, the Federated Auto Parts 400, Going on tomorrow afternoon, it is the third from last race of the regular season. They go to Watkins Glen next week, Daytona the week after that, then the top 16 advance to the NASCAR playoffs. As of right now, 14 of the 16 guys who would make it if the season ended today have victory, so they're automatically in the playoffs. Most in danger, fourth-ranked Martin Truex is yet to win, even though he's got 709 points to his record so far. Also, Eric Jones, number 14 on points right now, does not have a win. A win guarantees you a playoff spot unless they get more than 16. Then it goes back to points again. That could be a lot of fun to figure that out down the road. That wraps it up for Read About It at 9:21. I'm Greg Fennell, and after this break, we'll come back and look back at the Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl, which to me is kind of the signal that fall is right around the corner. Maybe the cold air this morning when you got out of the house did that for you as well. We'll talk about it more when we come back. This is Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK, WUVR. To get excited about the Red Sox with so many guys beat up, but hey, they beat the Yankees last night 3-2-10, so gives you something to look forward to tonight. 6:15 the broadcast time, Sox and Yankees from Fenway on NTK 99.7 FM. Let's grab the dead tree version of the newspaper today and the pitching matchup for tonight. If I get my eyeballs to function, it looks like it's going to be Cutter Crawford for the Red Sox in the starting role. 3-4 record on the season. And my sorry eyes can't tell me exactly who it is for the Yankees. But either way, Sox looking to do something they have not done all year long. Get a win tonight, they win an Eastern Division Series. I put an asterisk behind that because they did play the one-game set with Baltimore and won it on Thursday. But you know, that's not a series. That's a game. I think it's, what, 0-12-1 as of last check? So it wouldn't hurt to do it against the team that you despise the most. Let's see how it goes tonight at 6:15. Greg Fennell with you on Saturday Sports Talk here on NTK UVR. More live and local coming up at the top of the hour with Rich Parker and Rob Woodard and Valley Buzz after the news and the weather, 10:06 roughly, until 12 o'clock for your 3 hours of live and local on a beautiful Saturday. My wife and I were both remarking about this yesterday. We went off for a walk up in Pine Park. If you go to the area of the former third hole of Hanover Country Club, there's an entry point there, probably the westernmost entry point. And some years ago, I don't know who did it, but some years ago, somebody set up a mile and a quarter walk where, based on, obviously not actual miles, but mathematically calculated to be a similar ratio, little placards on trees to represent the distance of the various planets in the solar system. So you could call it a solar system walk. And we started doing that. Somehow I blinked and missed Mercury and Venus, but after catching Earth and I started watching for the other signs to other places, we got to Jupiter before her hips started to bother her, and she started walking back, and I gave it up. But the thing that I remember from it more than anything else yesterday, I get down by the Connecticut River, and a gentleman passes me in the opposite direction. We greet each other, as I like to do when I'm on the trail, whether walking or riding, and remarking that how lovely it was yesterday morning. After as lousy as it was heat and humidity-wise for most of the past 2 weeks, particularly even last Saturday at Castleton University. It was a beautiful sunny day, if you could discount the fact that it was like 91, 92 degrees at 12 o'clock at the start of the Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl, very humid. The blessing of the whole thing of the 69th edition of the Shrine game, for those of us in the press box, I was there doing public address announcing, which is why I wasn't here last week, thanks to Rob and Rich for filling in. The blessing was, because the game started at 12, the sun was behind Dave Wolk Stadium, and hence behind the press box and most everybody in the stands. So we didn't get blasted by sunshine all day long, which would have just made things a lot more miserable for everybody at the stadium. What I heard was Castleton had another event coming in later in the evening and needed everybody to shove out, so they moved the game up a half hour to a 12 o'clock start. What was really gratifying about the game last week was the stands were full. That was fantastic. I know it's really a drag for folks in New Hampshire, especially Manchester-Nashua axis, to come all the way over to Western Vermont to take part in this game that's been going on for almost 70 years. Yeah, now they have the Chad East-West game, and that siphons off 80-some-odd players, and those who choose to go to the Chad game can't play in the Shrine game due to Shrine rules. So it affects the amount of talent available for the New Hampshire roster. But in those past few years, the game has become a lot more competitive and a lot more fun to watch. Vermont still embraces it, and I know a lot of people, and I'm included, lament the fact that the game doesn't get played at Dartmouth College anymore because it's so centrally located for both states. But the bottom line of the Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl is to make money for those three Shriners hospitals in Boston, Springfield, Mass., and Montreal. And from all I've heard so far, ever since the game got moved to Castleton, that's what they've been able to do, a couple of $1,000 off of every Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl. And that is the ultimate reason why the game is where it is. Yes, a pain for New Hampshire, but it is working. And it's certainly working when you go there last Saturday on a hot and humid day and see the stands full from side to side at Castleton with 3,000 or 4,000 football fans. So that was really kind of good to see. Now, if you didn't go there and your exposure to the final score, New Hampshire 7, Vermont nothing, was all you got of the game, you might think, oh, that couldn't have been all that exciting. But actually, it was. It was a lot of drama throughout the contest. Both teams' offenses struggled all day because both teams' defenses played very well. Lebanon's Cameron Davio, as the Valley News' Benjamin Rosenberg noted in his game story, basically predicted it. He expected that it was going to be a strong defensive game for New Hampshire, and it certainly turned out that way. In Davio's case, 2.5 tackles for loss. That was best on the New Hampshire roster. But if you really want to have a punctuation point with an Upper Valley flavor to it for the game, it was on the last offensive play of the contest in the final 30 seconds of regulation for Vermont inside the New Hampshire 20-yard line. For some reason, Vermont coach Craig Sleeman decided mid-drive, as they were moving the football, to swap quarterbacks. Jonathan Terry of Bellows Falls struck me as having more success than Ben Serantonio of Essex in the game in terms of throwing the ball and moving the offense. Maybe he had a limited number of snaps designed for each player. I don't know what the reason was, but partway through that drive, he pulled Terry, put in Serantonio, and Vermont seemed to slow down at that point. They did get down to a fourth down, needed to get the football down inside the five for a first down. Of course, they were close enough, about 15 yards away, to possibly even pump the ball into the end zone. For the first time in the game, Sleeman, who runs a wishbone offense at a BFA Fairfax, called for a drag route pass for the top player, top athlete on the team, arguably Slade Bostemski from Rutland High School, who was the Vermont Gatorade Player of the Year for football last fall. Coming from the right side to the left, a play that they had not tried all game long, Bostemski suddenly popped out on the left flank wide open and took the pass from Serantonio, tried to turn the ball upfield. At that point, Lebanon High's Justin DiCarlo came in from behind, wrapped up Pastensky, and popped the football out. The ball bounded out of bounds on fourth down, so Vermont was not able to get that first down or the touchdown needed to possibly tie the game and end the game with the third tie in Shrine game history, because no overtime would have been played. So a big defensive game by DiCarlo, who was frequently in the middle of tackles out of his outside linebacker position. Davio doing his job. Chris Childs coaching, of course, for New Hampshire in his final game as a high school football coach, so we would gather. C.J. Childs, his son, playing both offensively and defensively in the game defense, the story of the contest for New Hampshire in this victory. In both cases, offenses just could not move the ball very well. Vermont did a nice job in adjusting to an interesting tweak on Chris Childs' part. He had a 6'5", 225 back by the name of Kevin Kalaje from Sanborn High School. And although Kalaje is listed as a quarterback, and maybe he does play quarterback down at Sanborn, instead, right from the get-go, Chris set him up in a direct snap wildcat formation, and the first four or five plays of the game were just straight snaps back to Kalaje, waiting for the line and his fellow backs. He'd have up to three of them in the backfield with him to open a hole. And it looked like basically New Hampshire would be able to go to that all game long. Now, obviously, when you got 37, 38 kids per state in this All-Star game, you want to give them all opportunities to play because it's going to be the last time most of them are going to be suiting up for a football game in their lives. So where Chris could have just rode Kaloje into the ground, he did try to open things up a little bit and get the ball to other people. Seamus Murphy, for one, for Hanover, had some nice runs out of the fullback position once they went to a standard wing T formation. But Kaloje was very impressive, and even Chris admitted afterward that you don't get many 6'5", 225-pound guys who can run with the ball. He may have been listed as a quarterback, but Childs' plan was not to have him throw the ball at all, just to run with it, or, in one case, catch it, because he was the one who had the reception for the only points of the ball game. 26-yard pass reception from quarterback Aiden Washington from Londonderry midway through the second quarter. The extra point was converted by Colin Gregg out of Milford High School, and that's all the scoring there was. C.J. Childs, by the way, nice leaping reception on a down and out in the left flat from Washington to get a key first down on that drive. In fact, I think it was the play before the touchdown pass from Washington to Kaloje. But after that, New Hampshire didn't move the ball, and they particularly did not move the ball in the second half. They really had no major scoring opportunities. Gregg had an opportunity for a 30-yard field goal in the fourth quarter that would have given New Hampshire a little bit of cushion, but pulled it wide left, and that was it. That's all there was for scoring opportunities for New Hampshire. And aside from the late opportunity that DiCarlo broke up, not a lot of scoring opportunities for Vermont. The best opportunity for the Green Mountain kids came in the third quarter when Windsor High running back Ben Gilbert, on a straight dive, blew right through the middle of the field, ran 69 yards before him being dragged down from behind right around the New Hampshire 20-yard line. But once again, Vermont's offense faded and no further opportunity to move the ball forward for the Green Mountain squad. So another victory for New Hampshire. It's the 50th in the series. Of course, for many years, New Hampshire was able to recruit from everybody in the state and didn't have a competing game, siphoning away charitable dollars like the Chad East-West game does. So the games are a lot more close, maybe a little bit more mistake-prone. I think both teams had two or three turnovers in Saturday's contest. But I think the one thing you cannot deny, well, two things you cannot deny. One, it was exciting from front to back. Low-scoring games can be that way. But defenses did rule. Cam Davio was right. Defenses did rule, and certainly on the New Hampshire side, with the 7-0 victory to get that 50th win in Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl history. Next August, back to Castleton. We'll see what happens with the kids who are chosen for that one. Gilbert, by the way, 94 yards on the game, just 6 carries to lead all rushers, so good on him and the Yellow Jackets. 9:36 the time. I'm Greg Fettel. This is Saturday Sports Talk. When we come back, let's take a look at some of the new people who are going to be in coaching positions around the Upper Valley, because high school sports are just getting started. More in a moment on NTK and UVR. It was playing something. All the tunes. It could be the title, it could be the subject, it could be the band. We'd like to have some fun with that when we do the music here on Saturday Sports Talk. Red Sox baseball tonight, 6:15 with the Yankees down at Fenway Park. NTK is where you'll find it at 99.7 FM, 615, 6:15 p.m. first pitch, 7:15 for the second of the three-game set. Then the Red Sox will play tomorrow night. ESPN has that one, so you have to stay up late for that. Day off on Monday, start a road trip on Tuesday in Pittsburgh. Looks like Kike Hernandez will be back from the injured list, so some of the walking wounded will hopefully start to make their way back to the Red Sox here in the next few weeks. They will go down to Baltimore, which has been very surprising, pleasantly slow, so enough to get in position as the third wild card in the American League going into action this day. this beautiful Saturday. So, you know, still some hope. Not great, but still some hope. Red Sox aren't dead yet, but certainly have had their issues so far this year. Yeah, game time coming up soon. Since I've been here for 36 years, the Shrine Maple Sugar Bowl has been the event for me that signals that the fall sports season is right around the corner. It probably was affected by the fact that the first Shrine game I ever covered was for a radio station in Springfield, Vermont, only because their sports director at the time was covering Legion baseball playoffs instead. He said, hey, you take the Shrine game, and New Hampshire ended up winning it 20-17 on the final play of regulation on a touchdown pass to a kid from Fall Mountain High School. And I was thinking, wow, they do this every year? And, yeah, you know, they sure do. And it's been going on for nearly 70 years. And shortly after that, the high school seasons get going, and we start talking games and what the kids are doing a lot more than we do over the 3 months, you know, of summer vacation. With schools getting started with action, high school football, New Hampshire, I think, is getting started today, as a matter of fact. A couple of new faces out there, but one of them a very veteran face. Lebanon High, of course, losing Chris Childs after 15 years. They went the veteran route. Athletic director Mike Stone getting one of his peers in Herb Hatch to take over the program. I don't see this as something that's going to go for 15 years. Even Herb admits it's probably only going to be for a couple, but he is in the process of learning what he has coming back. Last 3 years of Lebanon football have been very entertaining, very successful, made it to the state finals 3 years ago, lost to Trinity down on a miserably cold, wet day at UNH. They were good enough to win a state championship in 2020 during the COVID year. COVID situation kept them from going past the semifinals, and they were good enough to win last year but lost in the semifinals to Sauhegan. Large graduating class, a lot of them playing football or some sort of sport. Jack Stone playing down at UNH, Chris C.J. Childs at Castleton, Neoti Puni running down at UMass Lowell, Holy Cross, I believe it is. A whole bunch of athletes out of that group, so this could be a rebuilding year for Lebanon, and Herb is going to have his hands full, but he's learning his roster and politely declined joining the program today, but we may be able to get him on the program next Saturday to talk about getting back to coaching football, because here's a guy who has coached at Hanover High with success. He coached for a while at Oxbow, Kearsarge, I think, as well. He's been involved in lacrosse also for many years, so coaching is a thing that's really in his system. Good guy, a lot of fun to work with. Curious to see what he can do with, I think probably will be a depleted Lebanon roster, but we won't know until practices get going and some games get in the action. The other new guy takes over at Mascoma, John Daly, taking over for Kyle Colburn. In fact, I bumped into Kyle over at the Shrine game. He's now an assistant coach, I think he's at South Portland High School in Maine. Went out to Maine for a lifestyle change, more work opportunities, still wanted to coach, so I think we'll see him at some point. But he left Mascoma on good terms and did some really good stuff with the Royals. Now a former Royal in Daly takes over the program and will try to work his magic with Mascoma this year. Sam Cavallaro at Hanover, Matt Trombley down at Hartford, John Proper at Newport, Chad Westcott at Oxbow, Paul Silva with Stevens, and Greg Balch, Windsor, and Ramsey Worrell at Woodstock, all back again this year. In all these cases, Balch is the one looking to defend a state championship. He brought Windsor undefeated all the way to the title last year. Big things expected for Windsor again this season. And Proper had a good enough team with the Tigers last year to win states, but they got upset in the semifinals by Fall Mountain, strangely enough, and saw their season end sooner than perhaps they might have expected. A lot of new faces at Mascoma. They have a brand new athletic director in Steven Stebbins. You know about the football coach and the soccer coaches both change as well. Ryan Lamero, who I believe has done some coaching down at Colby Sawyer College, takes over for Kelly Green. Really disappointed that that Kelly had to leave the job, because she's done so much good stuff with Mascoma boys soccer to make them competitive. Of course, she's had some real high-end talent over the past few years with Ben Seiler doing so much of the scoring, but he has graduated, and it's a new generation to take over the Royals and see if they can get a little bit higher up the echelon of Division III boys soccer. Ryan with experience to lead that way. Mark Rockwood takes over for Denver Green, rather, who had coached Mascoma's girls soccer program through its inaugural, or its first two campaigns, actually, and through its first victory last year. So new coach with girls soccer for Mascoma High School. A few other new faces. Shannon Gould taking over girls soccer over at Oxbow High School this year. Also a new body for Sharon boys soccer. Grayson Levy is in charge of the Phoenix this season. Bob Bristol, the new coach of Thetford boys soccer, which has a new athletic director as well. Blendon Saul stepping down after last season. Bree Barnes, who I believe, if I remember correctly, was AD for a little bit at Oxbow and had been working at Hanover Rec, I think, coming back to become a high school athletic director at TA, so a familiar face there. Not a whole lot of changes on the field hockey side, which is really kind of a good thing. Shannon Martin is a new body with Newport, but other than that, the coaches all who had programs last year are back this year, and that, I think, is a very good sign, because field hockey is consistently one of the strongest sports in the Upper Valley. Hanover, competitive at the state championship level. Lebanon, competitive. Hartford, competitive. Windsor, a three-time state champion in field hockey in recent years. They have all done dynamite jobs, all the coaches have, to remain competitive and compete for titles in Vermont and New Hampshire. So I'm excited to see them come back and take over their programs. And, of course, you'll see some new stuff out there as well. Hartford High is taking a crack at girls volleyball at the club level. They've got a couple of games scheduled against Vermont Commons up in Williston. So we could be seeing a new sport there sometime down the road. Carlin Martinez taking over that opportunity to try to grow a new sport with the Hurricanes, who also have a new golf coach in Aaron Stevens taking over the program there for the fall season. Also, what's going to be interesting to watch is how things are going to work golf-wise at Hanover High School. Since the Republic of Phil Hanlon destroyed Hanover Country Club a few years ago, he may well have really seriously damaged the Hanover High golf program as well, because it succeeded for so many years because of having close access and easy access to the practice facility, to the course itself. The membership understood the importance of junior golfers to grow the game, and Hanover benefited with some 20 state championships, but they don't have that home course anymore. Do have a new coach, Pat Pelletier, who we're going to talk about briefly in the next segment, has decided to take a crack at coaching golf. He's done darn near everything else, competed at the high school level. He was a New Hampshire individual state champion, I think, back in 2005. He was a college competitor, won college tournaments. He was a pro golfer, won the Rhode Island Open. He got his amateur status back and won the New Hampshire Stroke Play Championship three times, working over at the Queechee Club as well, so he stayed close to the golf course, and he's even done some fundraising stuff through golf as well. So they get a guy who has played the game and worked the game at the professional and the amateur level and has wanted to get into coaching. Well, he's going to get a program that doesn't have a home for all intents and purposes. They, I think, will have at least one home match at Lake Maury, which they've done before. They won't be going over to the Queechee Club, which already hosts the Hartford and Mid-Vermont Christian golf program. So maybe over in Montcalm, maybe over at Eastman, perhaps. We'll have to see how that turns out. And, of course, numbers are going to have to turn out as well. Hanover doesn't draw as many in golf as it used to because it doesn't have that home course to head to anymore. Just a few of the names of new bodies are going to be out there coaching their various squads as the new high school season rolls around. Some football action going on today in New Hampshire. Vermont football practices begin on Monday. I believe most New Hampshire practices and all other sports start on Monday. Field hockey, soccer, etc. start next Thursday in Vermont. And by, I would think, Labor Day weekend, if not the weekend before that, we're going to start talking about results with all the various teams around the Upper Valley out in pursuing state championships in New Hampshire and Vermont. Looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite times of the year. 9:50 is the time, and we're going to have a few thoughts about the end of the summer season on the baseball and diamond and golf course when we come back right here on Saturday Sports Talk. Stick around. Whistling to sweet kissing baboons in the jungle. It's a knockout. If looks could kill, they probably will. In games without frontiers or without tears. Take the skinhead.
them falling.
Cameron and Beethoven ending up our boat music here on Saturday Sports Talk, thinking of games. So we'll be talking about games here really soon. So you start off with Space Invader from the Pretenders. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you didn't live through the 1980s video games. Missing Persons, Mental Hopscotch, Rock Pile, David, and Nick Lowe, the guys. Play that fast thing one more time. Your mandatory Ramones was What's Your Game off of Leave Hope. Peter Gabriel's Games Without Frontier, Cameron Beethoven's Take the Skinheads Bowling, one of my favorite 1980s era songs here on Saturday Sports Talk. Those are your tunes as we play with your head with new wave and funk music here on Saturday Sports Talk. Thanks to Dapper Dan for pulling all of that together at 9:55. A couple of notes to kind of wrap up the summer game season in a manner of speaking around the Upper Valley and beyond. Congratulations to the Martha's Vineyard Sharks out of nowhere, grabbing the NECBL championship this week. They were the top wild card of the three in the NECBL, fourth-ranked team in the playoffs, swept all five of their playoff games, which would indicate to me that it's just as important who you keep at the end of the college summer baseball season as to who you draw at the beginning of the season. Who wouldn't want to live in Martha's Vineyard for 2 months if you had the opportunity and not have to pay to do it? So two-game sweep of the Vermont Mountaineers blew them away in the opening game up at Rec Field in Montpelier, 16-3. Second game at the Shark Tank, 5-5 tie after seven. Vermont got one in the eighth, two-run homer for the Sharks. In the bottom of the eighth, 7-6 victory. That clinches the championship. First for the Sharks since they joined the NECBL a couple years ago from the Futures Collegiate Baseball League. Congratulations to Upper Valley Nighthawks third baseman Ryan Ignafo, the one player on the Nighthawks roster this summer to earn an all-league mention, made the first team. No great surprise, Iggy blew out of the gate with 40-some-odd RBIs in the first two-thirds of the season. Really was imperiling the league record for RBIs in a year, but kind of slowed down as the second half went on. But he stuck with the Nighthawks all the way through and even got a chance to play a couple of games for the Cotuit Kettleers of the Cape Cod League after the Nighthawks season ended, even had a home run in a game. So nice to see that happen for him, heading back to Eastern Illinois for another year of baseball out that way. Speaking of the Cape Cod League, Bourne Braves won that championship in two games over the Brewster Whitecaps the other day, and a former Upper Valley Nighthawk, Cameron Bai, on the roster for Bourne for that championship. Full disclosure, he stayed with my wife and I last summer when he played for the Nighthawks. I think he had 10 games, had an ERA in the low ones most of the year, which kind of reflected the way most of his sophomore season at Wichita State went this past year. So good to see Cam have some success and joining the Bourne Braves for that championship at the Cape Cod League level. Also of note, we were talking about Pat Pelletier becoming the high school golf coach at Hanover High, but still has some time to compete, and it's nice to see him have some success, ultimately finishing in a three-way tie for second place at the Stroke Play Championship from the New Hampshire Golf Association this week. Really an interesting format. Normally the tournament is played at one course, 54 holes over 3 days, but this time around the NHGA spread it around three different courses. Started at Green Meadow down at Hudson, went up to Canterbury Woods, Canterbury, finished off at Wyndham Country Club yesterday down in Wyndham. Pat had a great start at Green Meadow, a 70 to open the tournament. He had a lead of, two strokes after the first day of play, but Ryan Kohler out of Hooper down in Walpole, former Fall Mountain High School athlete who's had some success as an amateur golfer, he came back with a 64 at Canterbury Woods, took the lead and held on to it, and ultimately got a seven-stroke victory yesterday to cap off, or Thursday I think it was, to cap off the championship. His first at the stroke play in 10 years, a tournament that Pat had won four times, including three straight up through 2020. So good to see Pat still out there and still competing, working his way through a chance to become a high school golf coach as well. That does it for today's edition of Saturday Sports Talk. I'm Greg Fennell. Thank you to Dapper Dan down at the studio in New London for his work, and you folks at home for tuning in as well. You got Rich and Woody coming up with Valley Buzz in just a moment at 10:06. They'll take you up till 12 o'clock. Red Sox baseball tonight with the Yankees at Fenway. 6:15 is the broadcast time, 7:15 first pitch on WNTK. You've been listening to Saturday Sports Talk at WNTK and WUVR. Have a great weekend, everybody.